Back together again, you and I, chatting it up Thursday, March 2nd, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We welcomed Family Institute of Connecticut head Peter Wolfgang at a recent public hearing for the latest aid in dying bill at the Capitol. Sacred Heart University political science professor Dr. Gary Rose took a look at the state and national political landscapes, and he also had a few more thoughts on the area's continuing crime issues. Return visit from this gentleman who heads the Family Institute of Connecticut, the primary organization pushing the interests of the Catholic Church and Catholics in Connecticut. And there is concern once again from him and his organization regarding, again, and this has been introduced for years and years and years here, whatever it's called now, aid in dying, assisted suicide, physician-assisted suicide. That bill, again, up for debate, a big public hearing the other day, and among the folks speaking at that hearing was Peter Wolfgang, who joins us right now. Hello, Peter. It's Paul again. How are you, sir?
Paul, thank you so much for having me back.
No problem, Peter. Anytime. So, Peter, give me your, before we get into the specifics of this, paint a picture. What was that hearing like the other day at the Capitol regarding this latest iteration of this bill?
Paul, it was amazing. There were more opponents of assisted suicide there than there were supporters of assisted suicide. And what was, and of course, you know, I should point out that the Public Health Committee that is hearing this bill for now the eighth time in 10 years is completely stacked with supporters of assisted suicide. Mm-hmm. So even though I think we had a great day, I expect this thing to probably fly through the Public Health Committee. If we stop it, we're going to have to stop it in the Judiciary Committee, maybe on the floor of the House or Senate. It will be somewhere else in the process. But the hearing was incredible. And the striking thing, Paul, was the diversity of the people that opposed assisted suicide. You referenced my Catholicism. The Family Institute itself, our organization is ecumenical. We have both Catholics and Protestants. But the amazing thing was the diversity of the Coalition Against Assisted Suicide. You had disabled persons there. You had a big group called Progressives Against Assisted Suicide. You had this Jewish man with a yarmulke and a long beard up there. There's no other issue I work on where the coalition against the thing we're fighting is more ideologically diverse than it is when it comes to assisted suicide.
Peter, I'm reading some columnists here in the state who say, okay, now we're trying this again, and there are more safeguards built in here. And the, of course, as I've said on the show numerous times, you know, whenever there might be money involved, estates involved, and, you know, sometimes people circle like vultures. Well, now the proponents of the bill say, hey, we've beefed up the safeguards in the bill, so this truly will be just a decision between the person who may unfortunately have a terminal diagnosis and the doctors and the family members. What's your reaction to that assertion? And this, I'm guessing this probably came up the other day, but what are your thoughts on that?
So there are two points I would make in response to that. The first is that there are no safeguards that you could ever put in a bill that would make it right to make it legal for doctors to prescribe lethal drugs, suicide, as a treatment and grant legal immunity to the people that help you kill yourself. There's always going to be open to abuses of the kind that you referenced. You referenced money. I mean, there's going to be issues with inheritance. But here's the second point, Paul. We have been defeating this bill for 10 years in Connecticut. While we have been doing that, the issue has progressed in the 10 states where it's all already legal. And what we've seen is this business of safeguards, it's a bait and switch. So now, because we still don't have this in Connecticut, they'll come up with some safeguards, say a residency requirement. And what they won't tell you is that nearby in Vermont, the same organization that put a safeguard in the bill for Connecticut, a residency requirement, has a lawsuit going in Vermont to remove the residency requirement of the law where they already have assisted suicide. So they're not being honest. Any so-called safeguard that they're putting in the bill, what they call a safeguard today, they will call a barrier tomorrow. They will come back once this bill becomes law, and they will call the safeguards barriers, and they will come back to expand assisted suicide in Connecticut. So it's a bait and switch, and no one should believe it.
All right, Peter Wolfgang, for a few more minutes here. Peter heads the Family Institute of Connecticut, among the groups leading the opposition to the latest iteration and the introduction of what's been referred to now as physician-assisted suicide. Some people over the years have called it assisted suicide, end-of-life care, whatever. Peter is with us. And, Peter, the pushback I'm sure you heard, and I've kind of discussed on this show with people who like this idea, who despise this idea like you do, is that what if there is no hope? You know, one or two doctors or a specialist comes in and tells you, sorry, but you are terminal and you have sort of kind of this amount to live and you're in pain and you're in discomfort and you can see what it's doing to your family. What do you say to the people, Peter, who say, well, there should be an option for someone if they are absolutely given zero hope and their family agrees to do this? What's your answer to that?
Well, look, I don't support keeping a person alive by extraordinary means against that person's will. Sometimes you have to let nature take its course. I don't think that's the same thing, though, as proactively assisting in someone hastening death. That's where we would disagree. And there is a principle in medical ethics called double effect, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's okay to give someone pain-relieving drugs that may end up hastening their death, provided that was not your intent. And I think that's a very important bright line in medical ethics that we need to be very careful not to cross. If you look at what's happening in Canada, if you look at what's happening in Europe, what started as assisted suicide has become full-blown euthanasia, even involuntary euthanasia, where other people are actually killing you, sometimes against your will. And that is the line that you want to be very careful not to cross. I think that idea of double effect actually in some ways protects our humanity. It's almost never the case that the suffering is going to be intractable. There are ways to manage the suffering, but what you don't want to do is take away that principle of double effect where you're like deliberately trying to kill someone. It's a carnival of horrors from which we'll never come back.
Peter, so does this then mean that we should, in your mind and your group's mind, instead of doing this, would you say there are better ways of end-of-life care or what we call palliative care?
Well, that's exactly it, Paul. The state of Connecticut practically invented palliative care. We had one of the first hospices in the entire country on this. And the weird thing is we have like the fewest number of people in the country taking advantage of hospice care. So those are the sort of things that we ought to think about addressing in Connecticut. We've tried. Family Institute has been involved in passing, for instance, a right to try law where you could try experimental drugs if you're terminal, that you could move the process faster along to get those drugs approved. I mean, there are other things we can do. But what we should never do is cross the line into turning doctors into dealers of death.
Do you think, Peter, and I mentioned this the other day, everybody assumes, Peter, that if this law was passed or we put this law in place in Connecticut, everybody assumes that there would be, you know, maybe numerous physicians, you know, lined up to do this. I'm not so sure about that. Now, there may be some, but I'm worried, Peter, if the medical profession would push maybe members of its own to do this when they don't really want to or don't feel comfortable doing this as physicians.
Well, Paul, that's something we've seen in places where this has become legal. Then you run it. It's very similar to things we see on the abortion issue, on transgender issues, where people in the medical field who don't want their conscience violated are being coerced and told, no, you must be complicit in this or it will cost you your job. And I mean, that's happening in Canada. And we have grave concerns that it would happen here in the United States. Here in Connecticut, the Connecticut Medical Association moved from being opposed to assisted suicide to something they call engaged neutrality. And we don't really know what that means, frankly, but we don't have quite the same trust. I mean, we all went through a lot of crazy stuff during the COVID pandemic. We don't have quite the same trust in those fields, certainly not in the insurance companies. I mean, are they going to do the right thing or are they going to do the cheap thing? when the assisted suicide drugs cost less than the expensive treatment and medication that it may take to keep you alive. We're going to be empowering all sorts of bad things all across the medical arena if we do this, Paul.
And finally, Peter, you sent me part of your statement, your testimony the other day, and what, just one line here I want you to explain. You say our hearts go out to those being used as props for big suicide. Define big suicide for me.
Big suicide is the lobby that's doing this, Compassion and Choices. They are funded by George Soros. There is a population control agenda behind this. I don't want to go too, like, tinfoil hat on you, but, I mean, there's a very large global agenda involved behind this with, like, getting healthcare costs under control, and it's really about population control of the poor to the benefit of the rich.
Peter Wolfgang, thank you. Check it out online, folks. The Family Institute of Connecticut, their home website is ctfamily.org. Peter Wolfgang has been the guest. Peter, you know the number. Anytime, give me a call, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much, Paul.
All right, there you go, folks. What do you think? You let me know. It's a passionate issue. I understand that. Just, you know, and you remember last time this came up, we had a very eloquent, I believe he's an actor who lives in this state, who lost a wife near the end of her life, and it was not good for the family. This is a very interesting issue. Been a while since we checked with this gentleman back on the show, Sacred Heart University political science professor Dr. Gary Rose gives us his thoughts on all things politics statewide and national. Gary, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing fine, Paul. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, sir. Well, let's start up at the state capitol before we head to D.C. Boy, Gary, it certainly looks like, at least for the time being, that Governor Lamont has started his second term off a resounding win. With obviously, he's perceiving that as a mandate by being the adult in the room and coming across that way to people at the Capitol, especially with his own party when it comes to spending and the state paying down its debt. And at least for now, Gary, he's kind of quelled, at least for now, the far left of his party, who may not be all that thrilled with him.
Well, they're not all thrilled with him. That's very true. But at the same time, you know, some of his positions that he's taking certainly have been accommodating since he's been reelected, as you note. But, you know, at the same time, Paul, also he's placating somewhat of the middle road there as well up at the Capitol. And so I think he's really got a foot in both camps right now, where I'm sure that if we did a public opinion poll, at least among the lawmakers, he would probably get pretty high marks, I think, from both sides of the aisle.
It's that kind of, Gary, triangulation that Dick Morris came up with for Clinton.
Yeah.
Remember that? You stay to the right. You stay to the right of the left and the left of the right, and you're fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Dick Morris. There you go. Yeah, right. That's exactly what. Maybe he's read his book. Yeah, and he certainly is triangulating, as you say. You know, Lamont really, as I must say, you know, having watched him evolve from the time when he, you know, tried to be a senator, and then all the way on to becoming governor, and then into his second term. I mean, he really seems to have learned the political game very effectively. I would say that.
He seems, Gary, with the kind of persona. Now, who knows how these people are behind closed doors? It could be completely opposite. But you never hear, you know, he's not Dan Malloy. I always say he gets points for that. He kind of has this, and listen, the guy's wicked rich. Let's not fool anybody.
Yep.
But he kind of comes across with this kind of Ivy League tweed jacket wearing aw shucks demeanor, like, can't we all get along? And I think it's served him well so far.
Well, I completely agree with you on that. He is not an offensive personality at all, as Dan Malloy was. And when you speak to Republicans who generally don't support Governor Lamont, they still say they get along with him and they actually like him as a person. And you're right on that. You know, he is Ivy League. He's very comfortable with himself, very confident, but he never comes across as too offensive or abrasive. And so just his personal skills alone, or his personality alone, I should say, has gone a long way, I think, to, to working with people at the Capitol. And it's very different, as you note, certainly, and as you suggest, with his predecessor.
Although I would advise him, Gary, the dancing with a tie-dye T-shirt, I would. I don't know about you, but I'd say that's not quite
no,
a good look.
I wouldn't advise that. Yeah, that one was a little out of control.
Yeah, well, hey, he's a common guy. Our monthly check-in with Sacred Heart University political science professor, Dr. Gary Rose. Gary, shifting from the State House to D.C., real interesting dynamic here, Gary. If you look at the polls, which I do because I have no life, so I read every poll I can. It's no surprise that a majority of Republicans don't want Joe Biden to run again. Now, he is getting legislative wins, and he can kind of wink at everybody because he's winning on stuff. But there are still a lot of Democrats, too, who are wary about this, and you're getting reports now that his wife is saying, oh, he's going to run, and we're going for a second term. What are your thoughts on this? This is really sort of a weird equilibrium we have here.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think Joe Biden, though, has really enjoyed being president.
Yeah.
And as you make note, he has had some significant legislative accomplishments, some of which were, the result of a straight party line vote. But others, there have been some bipartisan achievements, too. And so, I think I see all the indications of someone really running. And whether or not there's going to be a challenge within his own party, I know what Marianne Williams says she's going to, but I mean, a real serious challenge. It's very, very difficult to take on an incumbent president within your party. And so I see President Biden. I don't like to predict things like this definitively, mm-hmm. but all indications is that he seems to really be preparing for a second run. And, it's going to come down to who the Republicans put up, as to whether or not he is reelected. But I do think we are going to have another run on the part of President Biden here. I think he is going to seek a second term.
Unless, Gary, somebody pulls what, Ted Kennedy tried in back in 1980 and, talk about an insurrection. He went after Jimmy Carter. I mean, can you at all see somebody...
See somebody
who's saying, listen, I love Joe Biden, but, you can't elect somebody who's 82. I mean, who out there might try that? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. There's always this talk of Gavin Newsom, being the next Kennedy-esque type figure. In fact, you mentioned Ted Kennedy, even when Newsom visited the White House, he came out with his, the white shirt on, the loose tie, and his jacket over his shoulder there.
All by accident.
Wow, he reminds me. Wow, he looks like, kind of a Kennedy type.
Yeah, that was all by accident, Gary. Nobody planned that. Yeah, right? Look at that.
But no, I right now, and I think if there is going to be a challenge, I mean, I think we would really start to see by now some movement within his party, to take him on, and so you go back. It's so difficult to dislodge an incumbent within your own political party. So it could be that Joe Biden could coast to, a nomination again.
Yeah.
Whether or not he can actually win a second term, I think that's a whole different matter. But the dynamics within his party certainly, I think, are very favorable to him. And certainly now when you look at the new Democratic nominating calendar with South Carolina coming first, I mean, that's Biden territory down there. And, that's what really saved him when he did. That's how he got the nomination, as a result of Jim Clyburn support. And so things are looking, I would say, that very positive for him in terms of another attempt to be president. I think he's going to go for it.
Dr. Gary Rose is the guest.
Yeah.
Gary, two high-profile possible candidates on the GOP side avoiding CPAC convention this week, Mike Pence and Ron DeSantis. And a lot of people say, hey, DeSantis is Trump with better instincts. I think so far he's right. Now, he hasn't declared yet, but DeSantis, I'm picking up, Gary, has this interesting talent of being able to just upset every faction of the Democratic Party and just kind of go along like, hey, who, me? Come on. He certainly has interesting and somewhat fascinating instincts about what he does and what he doesn't do and who he gravitates toward and who he doesn't so far.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Ron DeSantis is, I feel, the only one who could potentially take on Trump, you know, in a nominating contest there. But what Trump obviously wants is he wants to have a very crowded field because, mm-hmm. you know, if you go back to when he first ran and won the nomination in 16, you know, he got only around 30-35% of the vote in those primaries. And, you know, the Republican nominating contest is very different than the Democratic one, where if you get the most votes in a primary in a lot of the contests, not all of them, but in a lot of them, you win all of the delegates.
Yeah.
And so if you have five candidates running, 35% could be the plurality, and that could give him the nomination again. But if a lot of these lesser known candidates or, you know, candidates who don't have much of a chance of winning the nomination step out and it's Ron DeSantis, as you mentioned, against Trump one on one, then I think Trump is in trouble on that one.
Finally, Gary, if Nikki Haley wanted to lob a political grenade about, a cognitive test, 75 and older, she sure succeeded. Yeah. I don't know if people agree on it, but I read that and I went, wow, watch what happens. And sure enough, that's all they talked about for 3 days.
Yeah, she really certainly made headlines with that statement. And you know, but then what's his name there? Don Lemon comes back and mentions that, she was past her prime. And so, she kind of set a little firestorm going there. But I think that's probably now behind us on that whole cognitive test thing. But you know, not just what she said, but a lot of people do look at Joe Biden and in interviews, and he seems like he does have a cognitive issue. And I think that could obviously be very exploited by the Republicans if he does seek a second term, and it would be a legitimate issue as well.
Dr. Gary Rose. Gary, good to hear from you. We'll check with you down the road. Take care. Thanks.
All right, Paul. Yep.
Appreciate it. Our monthly check-in, regular check-in with Sacred Heart University political science professor, Dr. Gary Rose. Good to hear from him. You know, I don't like having to start the show with the police blotter because you might say, well, that's lazy, Paul. Stuff happens every day, and maybe it does. But, you know, I just got to tell you, you got to be careful out there. And you just heard there's more jousting in Congress. The Senate Minority Leader, the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, is out there saying that Democrats don't care about crime. And we get that argument here in Connecticut. And crime was the big issue in the Chicago mayoral race 2 days ago in round one, won by former Bridgeport School Superintendent Paul Vallis, who will be going to a runoff there against a decidedly more progressive gentleman who's not necessarily a supporter in great deal of the police. And you hear that and you say, well, you know, it's around us as well. Now, get this. This story today, and again, I hate to start a show like this, but I have to because it happens. You hear it every single stinking day, whether it's in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Waterbury, Danbury, New London, Stamford, Greenwich, Middletown, Meriden, you know, whatever number of the great 169 little areas in this state. Get this. And again, stay till the end. You know how on social media they say, wait for it. Oh, the good part comes at the end. Trust me. It'll be tantalizing before we get there. Warrants saying a Bridgeport man broke into Norwalk homes while families slept inside. You're not even safe behind your own locked doors and windows. Pat Tomlinson's story in the Connecticut Post A Bridgeport man convicted of nighttime home burglaries was arrested Wednesday on allegations he broke into multiple Norwalk homes, some of which had families sleeping inside, according to the arrest warrants. 21-year-old Derek Ramirez charged with first-degree burglary, conspiracy to commit first-degree burglary, two counts each of third-degree burglary, conspiracy to commit third-degree burglary and sixth-degree larceny in connection to several home break-ins reported in Norwalk. The first two occurred two separate areas, Delaware Avenue, October 21. Police said the warrants of two people were seen entering one home via a window and attempting to get into another. Now, yada, 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 blah, 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 blah. This story goes into great detail. Police responding to a similar home burglary reported at a Kermit Street home near Westport Avenue in Norwalk on November 3rd. So I said to myself, hi, how are you today? I said to myself, let me scroll down here because I know I'm going to find it. I know just the way these stories are written, right? Come on. Come on, you know what Paulie is thinking here. Come on, you know exactly what I'm thinking. And it details the burglaries here and what this gentleman, innocent till proven guilty, I understand that. Can't convict people in the court of public opinion, I understand that. But my little middle finger, my index finger was going scroll, 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 scroll. Oh, keep going, scroll, scroll again. Scroll again. Here it is. Here it is. Mister, I haven't worn the rimshot guy yet. Mister Rimshot, could we wake you up here? Thank you. Well, you didn't have to do it, but okay, he's awake. See, the rimshot guy is good because the only way he can communicate, let's hear a rimshot again. You can give it to us. Come on there, Mister Rimshot. There it is. So that's, he doesn't, he's a man of few words. Well, see, that's a different guy now. Now, here, the timpani roll guy, they work in tandem. They're like a really good double play combination. Shortstop, second baseman, boom, boom, back to first. 1-2, double play. There you go. Here you go, Mr. Rimshot guy. On Wednesday, police in Norwalk arrested Ramirez on the additional burglary counts. Ramirez, who was on probation for multiple burglary-related convictions. All right. How about that, huh? Who would have thought? He's got a rap sheet. I'm shocked. Aren't you? He's got a rap sheet. And I just, you know, I started to read this story, and it was a rather lengthy and well-detailed story here in Hearst, Connecticut Media, Connecticut Post, Pat Tomlinson's story, and I'm scrolling down, and now because you know, as the sun rises in the east, my friends, and sets in the west, basic astronomy, celestial astronomy 101, you just know it, and here you go, second or third graph from the bottom. Police arresting Ramirez, the suspect, on the additional burglary counts. He was on probation for multiple burglary-related convictions. And he also faces three counts of violating his probation. Are you shocked? Yes. I know you're stunned. Aren't you? Now, look. Let me say this again because I feel I always have to because I just know there are people out there screaming and yelling at the radio saying, well, you're not an expert in this. I'm not. I don't pretend to be. There are a couple of things in life, radio being one thing, a few other areas, where I kind of sort of think I'm maybe not an expert, but I can carry on a pretty lengthy conversation and cover a lot of stuff. Beyond radio, we won't go into that. But having said that, you know, you see these things over and over and over and over and over again. And you wonder, you know, why is, I don't know, you tell me, because I'm lost here. I generally am. It's my general, it's my general state of mind here. Eric tells me all the time, hey, Paul, you're lost. You don't hear what he tells me on the breaks. Oh, man. But how come this happens all the time? Are we not doing a good enough job with career criminality? I don't know. But how often do you hear this? And I don't know about you. It's damn distressing. For me, anyway, right? Aren't you at least a little bit, just a skosh distressed here? You know, to hear on and off of, well, the person arrested here or this person arrested there, you know, they have multiple felonies on their record. So again, I will float out there for you. And again, I know a lot of people recoil at what we call minimum sentencing, minimum mandatories. I know a lot of people recoil at longer prison sentences. And they do have a point. Just because you keep somebody in jail, in a corrections institution, in a penal situation, does that mean they won't come out and reoffend? Probably not. I'm not an expert in this. I do have friends and relatives who work in this field, and they tell me it is difficult to predict the recidivism rate of people. I get that. But what do we do about this? Because it doesn't seem to change. Or is it getting better? I don't know. But all you have to do, and it's not 100% of the time, I get that, I understand that, but like I said, the minute I saw the initial headline on the front of the Connecticut Post today and then clicked on the link to get to the story, Bridgeport man broke into Norwalk homes while families slept inside, I said, I bet with myself. Self, I said, I'll bet you, one of my multiple personalities, I'll bet you this is not a first-time guy. And it wasn't. In fact, he was on probation for multiple burglary-related convictions. So here's the question I'll put out today. And I don't know if you have any credible ideas to this. Maybe you have experienced this in your life. Maybe you know some families that have been hit by this. Maybe you know some loved ones, relatives who've been hit by this. What do we do about career criminals? Because not just in the Bridgeport area, but in New Haven, Hartford, Danbury, all over the state, it's almost expected. You're surprised if you hear of or read of a story or of a condition or a situation where there were first-time offenders. Wow, first time. Police say the suspect had no previous arrest record. Wow, that's not the norm. That's the exception now. Wow, first-time kid at 17 or 18, too bad. But how often do we hear these multiple offenders over and over and over again from the time they're juveniles all the way up into, well, into adulthood? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. It's frustrating because you're not even, especially in an urban setting, you're not even safe inside your home. Did this stuff happen years ago to the extent it's happening now? Or are we just hearing about it more? Maybe that's my concern. I don't know.